Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live on 101.3 KPCG, and we're online at kpcg.fm, too. There's another massive hurricane on the way. Where's it going to hit? When's it going to get there? We've got some thoughts on that, some ideas anyway, from what the latest models show. Also, there's a new UK poll that shows that people over there are not as religious as they used to be. Probably not surprising. And we're going to compare the United States of 1950, some people would say the heyday of the U.S., to today. I think you'll be interested in that. That and more this edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live at 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm. We have a live link at thetrumpet.com as well. You can listen there if you'd like to, or any other location where we're located. And you can find the podcast of our program at kpcg.fm, and it's on iTunes as well. Sign up for that if you'd like to, because maybe you can't listen at 10 or the replay at 7. Or the replay at midnight. Maybe you have to listen to the podcast. We're okay with that. I'm Dwight Falk, by the way. Grant Turgeon here today. And Grant, you look like you got some sunshine over the weekend. You're looking tan.
Yes. Well, we had a really long flag football preseason tournament just to get used to the new types of rules. There's not really any blocking anymore, and so it's kind of a faster game. The quarterback's under a lot more pressure. We just ended up playing like four different games and going through the rules and everything.
Yeah, that's here at on the campus of Herbert W. Armstrong College, where we're broadcasting from. There's intramural leagues every year, and they have a flag football one. So, and you're young enough to bounce back, not be hobbling today. Once the day after and several days after there's hobbling, then you have to consider your ways and whether you should continue in this sporting adventure.
I do definitely feel sore from those types of things, but really, on Sunday, they had all six teams out there, and so there weren't even really enough flag belts to go around. And so I just ended up coaching my team, the Imperial Academy boys, and didn't even hardly play at all.
Oh, there you go.
So I'm fine. Either way, I would have been fine.
Yeah. Well, it's I took my son bowling yesterday, and we had 2 hours. That was the time limit for the deal we got. So we bowled as many games as we could. We got through seven, just me and him. And
wow.
And I'm actually sore today. And that's how pathetic. I was in the middle of doing it, and I started getting cramps in my calf muscles. And I thought, this is an embarrassment. I mean, how far have I? How have the mighty fallen? I came in bowl for 2 hours without having to stretch my legs and ask for some sort of hydration. So, but anyway, it was a lot of fun. Hopefully, everyone had a good weekend. And then, of course, here in the U.S., we had an extra day as well, Monday with the holiday. Some of the headlines today from thetrumpet.com: broken arrows and empty quivers. Will the world's lost nuclear weapons trigger World War III? By Jeremiah Jacques. It says, in the wrong hands, even just one stray nuclear weapon could contribute to disaster. So true. And then you've got the North Korea blowing things up over there. So it's a volatile time.
Yeah, it is. And Mr. Armstrong talked about it for a really long time, just about how there's never really been a time where nuclear weapons have proliferated like they have. Mr. Fleury's talked about that as well. Really, when you look at the different prophecies, they can only apply to now, because when else could we possibly exterminate all human life from the face of the earth?
Yeah, exactly. Christ talks about that, right? Matthew 24. No flesh being saved alive if he didn't intervene at some point. And so you have to think, okay, so when was that time period for? What's he talking about? Well, we couldn't do that until atomic weapons, nuclear developments. You know, there's been world wars, but until, without that type of weaponry, somebody can get away. You can go hide somewhere, but with that kind of weaponry, you can't. So for people that are looking at Bible prophecy and thinking about, well, when is this talking about? What's the time period? Just look around at the weaponry. It's a good indication of where we are.
And we've definitely even advanced a lot farther or further than we did from the last century, further than we were in the last century, just because of how just the way that Japan was bombed. And just when you look at how horrible that was for the people there, and yet we have weapons now that are, what, hundreds of times more devastating than that. We really don't even need weapons that are that devastating. It's almost like a single one of the missiles now could wipe out the Earth 10 times over.
It's a lot. It's overkill, to say the least. Yeah, it's interesting, too, if you read about the history of Hiroshima there. And when that atomic bomb was detonated, you know, people didn't know what it was. Some did. Maybe some of the scientists did, and the government might have a little bit. But the people that were affected, they just didn't even know what happened. And so it's interesting if you read some of that history. You know, there was a lot of rumors flying around about what happened to them. They didn't know. And then they didn't know what the results of it would be. You know, not everybody died, of course, in the immediate blast. So there's these illnesses that happen down the road, radiation sickness. We know more about it today, but back then they were befuddled by that. And you look at the destruction that caused. And like you say, that was a small weapon in comparison to the Satan missiles that Russia has right. Or other nations have today. So you look at that destruction historically, and then you think about what we could do today, and it's scary to think about.
Yes, and there's that Chernobyl accident as well, where people generations down the line are still being born deformed. That just shows you the devastation, the destruction that is possible with these types of weapons. It doesn't even matter if someone sets them off. If there's an accident like there was at Chernobyl, then you have some huge problems as well, places that are still to this day uninhabitable.
Yeah, there's some really bad places over there in Russia that you don't want to go to. Chernobyl's the only one that they admitted. They had a lot of meltdowns before then, but they could keep it secret. But they had to admit the Chernobyl one because it was so bad. There's some lakes over there that are so toxic because of the waste that was put in there that I don't even think you can stand on the shore. Like, you'd be radiated just standing on the shore. And people have lived there over the years, so. For those that think maybe the Russian system's a good one, you know, think about that a little bit.
Right. That's a really solid case against the Soviet Union and the tyranny that they imposed on other people, and even the satellite nations they had that were pretty much just as miserable as the people in Russia itself. Definitely not a system that anyone would, in their right mind, anyone would want to live under, at least.
No, they wouldn't admit that they had all those meltdowns before Chernobyl, and then when people would get sick, because they often did, from other accidents and nuclear waste, they would tell them that they had this special sickness. They had radiation sickness, but nobody really knew what it was outside of, you know, some of the medical personnel. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, they told them, yeah, well, you've got the special sickness, you know. And a lot of people died that way, and communities were just destroyed. And the leadership at the top knew what they were doing on some level, and the people didn't, so. And what are you going to do? You can't move if you're in one of those cities. I mean, it would be hard to do because they wanted to keep their development of technology secret from the rest of the world. And so, you know, they're throwing humans in there, and they're kind of like just a cannon fodder, as it were, to work in these cities and then die of the special sickness. So that's the history of mankind, especially over there in the Soviet Union.
Yeah, I saw an episode of this show. I think it's called Swamp Monsters. This guy was trying to find this gigantic mutated fish over there, like just within sight line of the factory that exploded.
Wow.
And he had to carry around this beeper that would beep every time he was in an area that had too high of radiation. So even many decades after that accident took place, you had to be extremely careful. I think he had like a machine he had to go back to and try to get the radiation off of him, or somehow if the beeper went off. So it just was a really dangerous project he was trying to undertake there.
Did he find anything?
He found some pretty huge, ugly looking fish, but I don't know if it was like to the extent of the Loch Ness monster, right. like it was rumored over there.
Oh, wow. Yeah, there would be probably some strange things. Well, I think if people take tours, and I think you can take a tour of maybe Chernobyl, but you have to have one of those. I don't know what they're called, but they measure the radiation levels, and you can only be in there for a certain period of time. Just send me a postcard. I'm not going. And maybe I don't want the postcard either. It's glow
not,
in the dark.
It's not the most attractive place. I mean, it just looked like everything was dead. I didn't see any leaves on any of the trees on that show. It just definitely it just shows you how horrible we can be to the. I mean, that's what is truly devastating to the environment, not climate change. If you have a single accident with a weapon like that, then you have a big problem with the environment.
Yeah. I mean, the people that are really, really, really into the whole climate change issue, they should, if they want to protest, go protest the nuclear sites over in North Korea. Mm. But of course, you're not going to probably want to do that. By the way, speaking of climate change, this wasn't in my notes, but I saw it. There's a book that got put out debunking the Al Gore book on, I forget what his book is called. He had a new one that came out. Or
is it the same title as the movie?
It might be.
Like,
yeah.
What was that? Inconvenient Sequel or something? Inconvenient Truth, the Inconvenient Sequel or something.
So,
like
yeah,
that.
Anyway, the book that came out debunking what he said is outselling his book.
Oh, wow.
So, anyway, he's making money for somebody. And, you know, he invented the internet, and that caused a lot of great things to happen, too. I heard something about that. I'm not sure. Top story today at thetrumpet.com. Broken arrows and empty quivers. Will the world's lost nuclear weapons trigger World War III? Related to that, the threat of nuclear terrorism is real and Europe's nuclear secret. So a lot to look at there at thetrumpet.com. They're still trying to clean up in Houston. That's going to take a long time. And there's another hurricane on the way. Irma. She's up to a category 5, which is the highest level, and could cause catastrophic damage to Florida, they think. So they've declared a state of emergency already in preparation. It's about, 5 days out.
And that one's out in the Atlantic Ocean, right? Not the Gulf of Mexico,
right.
Like the last one?
Right, okay. Yeah. And so this is a little write-up here from Good Morning America. It says, extremely dangerous Hurricane Irma strengthens to Category 5. Catastrophic damage is possible in Florida. Hurricane Irma has strengthened to that 5, and they say it's packing 175-mile-an-hour winds. And I think for Category 5, it has to be sustained winds exceeding 156. So Category 5 could be, you know, anything over 156. Mm. And it's up to 175 right now, so that would obviously be deadly. And hurricane watches have been upgraded to hurricane warnings for Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands. Irma is expected to continue churning with deadly hurricane force winds and a dangerous storm surge across a wide swath of the Caribbean, depending on how you like to say that, before moving toward southern Florida later this week. The current models have Irma hitting the U.S. somewhere on the coast very early Sunday morning. So that could change, but I mean, it could go a lot of different directions, but looks like it'll probably hit the U.S. somewhere.
Hardly even a break between hurricanes. It's just, obviously, there's no mercy involved there. That's a tough situation for anyone experiencing those things. And you have to wonder, why is it happening? That's a question that we talked about last week, and a question that it's kind of hard to acknowledge because it does imply that maybe we're causing it, and not through climate change either. We're causing it in a different way.
Yeah, great booklet at thetrumpet.com, Why Natural Disasters. Be a great time to read it because we're seeing a lot of natural disasters happening. Also, in Los Angeles, I think they have the biggest wildfire in the city limits history, and I'm not sure how that's going. I saw a report the other day on that, and I thought, wow, you know, how crazy. Houston's underwater, and then you got raging fires in Los Angeles. You know, they like a little bit of the water over there where they need it, and it's just disaster upon disaster, it seems like.
Yeah, I was talking to someone from Oregon, and he said at a spot near him, apparently there's like an ash and rain, or just ash kind of falling down from the sky in an area pretty close to him. And that just shows you it's pretty wide reaching, I guess, far reaching for it to go that far.
All the way from Los Angeles, huh?
Yeah, I don't know if he's talking about like within Oregon or maybe it's up in Northern California, but even places pretty far away are experiencing some of that ash falling from the sky.
Yeah, they had a really interesting report on that on whatever the national news was. I can't remember the channel, but they were there interviewing people, and they were watching their house burn. Nothing they can do. They can't stop it, and strange feeling. Of course, the reporter's right there. How do you feel about this? You know, I feel tremendous. I love it. You know, I mean, why do you think I feel about it? But so people tried to get their stuff out, and then, of course, in Houston, they're going back and trying to pull out whatever salvageable items they can, but there's not a lot that's salvageable there. And boy, I don't even think we even have a concept of what the cost of that's going to be yet. I mean, we've heard some numbers, but it's just devastating to that area.
I have a hard time believing it's only going to be $125 billion, which is the number I've heard. Probably could go up to $200 billion, maybe a lot more than that. because it's almost like every building in sight and beyond that was filled with water. And even in terms of like the body count, as the water levels go down, the body count continues to rise. And of course, that's going to affect a lot of businesses as well, a lot of those people who work. And of course, their lives are more important than that. But just the cost of it all around, you have to think of a lot of different factors there.
Yeah, there was a really good Trump a Daily program yesterday. If you didn't get a chance to hear it, Andrew Locher was doing that one and talked about Houston and some of the relief efforts. And you know, different celebrities and things, they've raised some money, and they're trying to help out. But it doesn't touch the cost of what happened there. So it's really an interesting situation down there in Houston. I was talking to somebody actually yesterday that I think they're the main company they work for, like the headquarters is there in Houston area, and nobody's getting to work. You know, I mean, you don't have electricity, you don't have power, can't get there. So just the cost of doing business being stopped is going to have to be factored in as well, and I don't know that we can put a dollar amount on that right now. So it's probably not going to come in any less than they thought. I would imagine the actual cost will be more.
Yeah, you have to feel really bad for all of the business owners down there, because either the business got destroyed or it's being delayed in terms of its production for so long that it could have a huge impact on people's bottom line there.
Yeah, real bad deal there down in Houston. There's an interesting write-up. Obviously, with President Trump in there, he has a different thinking on a lot of things than President Obama did. And this is a write-up from hotair.com. I don't know if you can trust them, but they're full of hot air, I guess. It says, former President Barack Obama plans to speak out if President Donald Trump declares his intention to end the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program. I think they call it DACA, according to a person close to the president. President Obama. Obama's current plan is to post a statement on Facebook and link it to Twitter, where he has a 94 million followers. That's a little less than we have at kpcg.fm. You can follow us on Twitter. In his final presidential press availability, he suggested that he would speak out if Trump went after the Dreamers, as they're called, and that it was one of the few issues where he would feel morally compelled to do so. So apparently he might getting into it again. So that's not typical for past presidents to do. They usually kind of let it be, but he might jump back into the public debate anyway.
Yeah, it sounds like he's trying to assume the moral high ground, even though the whole reason that those children came into the country was because of their lawless parents, people who took them into the country illegally. There obviously are some different ways that you have to think about dealing with that, but the whole core issue there is that the law was broken. That's the only reason they're even in the country. And it's totally within the rights of any president to say, well, you've been here for, you know, three or four decades now, and I'm sure you could be fine going back to your country.
It's funny to me that even the title of the program is Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals Program. You're deferring it to when? Are you going to take action later? Am I not understanding what that means?
Right. The name itself says that there should be an action taken eventually, and all President Obama did was kick that can down the road. Sure enough, he didn't think that his arch nemesis would be elected the president, but he was. And so now Mr. Trump has that prerogative. He can do whatever he pleases with the issue.
Yeah. An interesting title for a program, Deferred Action. Trump a Daily radio show today. Make sure you listen for that with your host, Stephen Fleury from Edstone, England. Talked a little bit today about the 7-year anniversary of Armstrong Auditorium opening up. Has it been 7 years? Yes. That is the broadcasting, of course, to you today from the campus of Herbert W. Armstrong College. And that's the auditorium here on the campus, kind of the landmark, I guess, of the area. And there's been a lot of activities there in 7 years, a lot of concerts and other things. I was trying to think of what some of my favorites would have been. This has been a lot. There's been a whole lot that has happened there, whether it's concerts or other things. Of course, there's a public concert series people can come to. And I guess my favorites would probably be the musicals that were put on. They're just kind of an exciting, a lot of people involved in them. But there's been a lot of great concerts that have come through and a lot of activities over 7 years.
Oh, yeah. The musicals have been outstanding, about David, Jeremiah, Isaiah, Peter Waldo, is this?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, his first name's Peter. Ruth. So just some really inspiring biblical characters or heroes throughout the ages of the true church. Those musicals have obviously some pretty deep lessons to them. They go beyond even just music.
Yeah, and we play those here on KPCG too, usually on the weekends. So you can listen to those too. But we've had tremendous artists come through over the years, quite a few world-renowned artists, and we got more coming up with the concert series here too. So Music for Life with your host Ryan Malone, he previews a lot of those concerts here at KPCG. And so you can get some insight into the concerts that are coming in this year. ArmstrongAuditorium.org is the website where you can look and see what's coming your way, and you can get tickets and come check it out. Grant and I will be there hiding, lurking in the shadows.
Yeah, it takes a lot. I was thinking about this recently. It takes a lot of work to get that concert series each year planned out because you have to book them years in advance. I mean, that's how far ahead of time these musicians are thinking. And so, you know, 2 or 3, 4 years in advance, you have to have them booked. If anything changes, you have to find someone else who hasn't already been booked that far in advance. It's a lot of work, and those performers certainly make the work worthwhile.
Yeah, they're real pros, of course. We've had the Chieftains come, which was a highlight. They're world renowned, of course. And I think with that one, if I remember correctly, they had people even come up on stage if they wanted to with them. And there was a few brave souls that went up there and got into the spirit of the music.
Wasn't there one where our Irish dance program also came up there with them?
Yeah.
Because they've done it more than once here, I think, haven't they? Or was it just that one time?
One that I can recall for sure, and then I know there's been a few other Irish-flavored things that have happened. But all kinds of great music, whatever you're interested in, typically something there for you. Within the realm of the fine arts anyway.
Yeah, and it's not just classical. That's what Mr. Malone will always say
right
on that program, and just to whomever will listen, he will tell you it's not just classical music. It's folk. It's popular music. It's just probably not what you would see at most concerts, I guess. It's not the typical pop or hip-hop, but it is of a higher standard than that, obviously.
Right, yeah. So some really great concerts that are coming through. And then, of course, the Russian National Ballet has come through multiple times. They're coming back again, and that's always exciting. People, I think, really enjoy that, and it's fun. You know, if you have a little daughter, especially, they like to come. They like to dress up and be a ballerina, I guess.
Those always seem to get the most, ticket or concert goers, those ballets. I personally can't relate to why that would be the most popular one, but I do also... I can definitely see how hard it is to do those different dance moves, the agility it takes, the strength. It takes so much strength to be a ballerina, which most people probably wouldn't even think about.
No, they do have to be really just top-notch athletes. You have a daughter. You just wait. You should get a little older. And
I'm sure I'll enjoy it more when that time comes.
You ask her, why do you like that so much? But they tend to. Maybe not in every case, but a lot of them really do. Here's a one other note. This is from the BBC. More than half in the UK are non-religious, according to a new survey. Last year, 53% of people described themselves as having no religion in a survey of 2,942 adults by the National Center for Social Research. Among those aged between 18 and 25, the proportion was higher at 71%. So when you dip down into those younger years, 7 and 10, not religious. The Bishop of Liverpool said God and the church remain relevant, not to a lot of people currently, and that saying no religion, he says saying no religion was not the same as considered atheism. So I don't know about that. It seems like it kind of is, but I've heard a lot of people say, I'm not religious, but I'm spiritual. That's kind of like the new thing to say. I'm not really sure what that means.
But. Yeah, that seems like you're opening yourself up to the darker realm of the spirit world. If you're spiritual but you have no real direction there, that just means that you're probably headed to a not so safe place.
Yeah, so all kinds of different ideas out there. But again, I mean, it's a multicultural society, right? So you're going to have all kinds of ideas and religions and things happening. So that's the new study there out of the UK that more than half of surveyed are not religious.
You have to think a big part of that would also come from just the general lack of curiosity today. I think there's also been studies about that as well, how people just don't really wonder as much as they used to about what's out there in the world or in the universe. And anything outside of their daily bubble, it's not really that important to them. And so why would you ask those deeper questions about, you know, does God exist, or what would he require of people if he created us in the first place? Those types of questions aren't being asked because, in general, people aren't very curious anymore.
Yeah, I mean, really, if people were honest, I guess, about what they spend their time on or what they like to do, in a lot of cases, it would be social media. They'd be more interested in that, probably, or there's just other things that take their interest, and they're more immediate and they're more accessible at that moment. And so, yeah, and like you say, a lot of just not probably stopping the incoming information via whatever app or internet or whatever you're looking at and just thinking about a few things. And, well, it's easy just to go day to day and not really think about things until maybe something difficult strikes, and then you need something beyond your normal routine to get you through that. Then I think people start questioning some things.
Well, yeah, that's how it goes. The stereotypical story of the person on the raft in the middle of the ocean, and then all of a sudden they start crying out to God for help. Right. But their entire lives before that, God was never even a thought. That's just kind of how it goes, because obviously there could be no greater thing to figure out in life than if God exists and where we should go with that information. But it's not the most enjoyable thing to find out for a lot of people. It takes a lot of deep study. It takes a really long attention span. You have to really work hard at it. It's not just going to provide you with immediate gratification for the senses.
And then there's a chance that maybe you might be doing something wrong.
And you have to change.
And you have to change, and that's not...
You get convicted, and you feel bad about yourself.
Yep. So anyway, interesting survey there out of the UK, BBC, more than half. And the UK are non-religious. If you look back in 1983, when they started the survey, only 31% said that they had no religion. So the numbers have... We have a good write-up at thetrumpet.com about that as well. I think Dennis Leap wrote that a few years ago about this... they're called the nuns, I guess. Not like the Catholic nuns, but as in I have no religion.
N-O-N-E.
Yeah.
Yeah.
N-O-N-E. So anyway, interesting write up there. One historical note you might find interesting: on this day in 1698, Russian Tsar Peter the Great imposed a tax on beards. this has happened historically in certain countries. The beard tax was to bring Russian society in line with Western European models. To enforce, and not models like the ladies, to enforce the ban on beards, the Tsar empowered police to forcibly and publicly shave those who refused to pay the tax. I don't think that would be a smooth situation. That would be a pretty rough shave, I'm guessing.
Yeah, at least hopefully their faces would be a little bit more smooth, literally, after something like that. Although I'm sure if you were forcibly shaven, that would be very painful. I just envision someone being put in the stocks and then shaven and then... maybe pelted with tomatoes after that for their rebellion.
The public shaving, yeah. It says those associated with the imperial court, military, or government were charged 60 rubles annually. If you wanted to keep your beard, you had to pay a tax on it. Wow. Wealthy merchants were charged 100 rubles per year. Other merchants and townsfolk were charged 60 rubles per year. And the poor people had to pay less, two half Copics, whatever that is, every time they entered a city. Those who paid the tax were required to carry a beard token, a little coin. This was a copper or silver token with a Russian eagle on the reverse, and the lower part of the face, the nose, the mouth, and the whiskers and beard were on there as well. Wow. So it'd be cool to get... there's a picture of it online if you want to find it. But if you have a beard... you might want to carry the beard token if you're in Russia, just in case they revert back to this. Maybe Mr. Putin, he doesn't have a beard. Maybe he'll get the beard tax going again.
I think this is not really related to Russia, but the New York Yankees baseball team has some sort of a rule on no facial hair, and you have to keep your hair short. And I like that a lot, because you see how scruffy some guys get if there's no sort of guideline there, especially players. There's one guy with like these gigantic dreadlocks. I don't even know how he puts a hat on his head, and like some beards hang down to the mid chest, things like that. It kind of seems like it would be distracting as a player as well.
It's I think they're rally beards, right? Like they
right.
They say, hey, we're not going to shave until the playoffs are over or mm-hmm. something, and they get these huge beards going. So
yeah, and then there was like the Puerto Rican national team. They all dyed their hair like bleach blonde, and it was just a hideous sight to behold. It was hard to even watch their games. So, yeah, you could definitely see why there should be some sort of a standard in place. I don't know if it needs to be nationally imposed by a tax, but for some sort of guideline, I think that's definitely worthwhile.
And a lot of times they would consider it more than 2 weeks' growth. So you know, you could say, hey, I just didn't get around to shaving today. And, you know, so they would try to judge that, I guess, based upon, and some people are hairier than others.
It's too hard to judge that.
Yeah.
For me, 2 weeks looks like someone else's stubble.
Yeah. Some people they have to, shave a couple times a day if they want to be clean shaven.
Right.
But, so that was an interesting thing on this, this day in history. We want to take a look today at an interesting, comparison. If you look at the United States and the United Kingdom as well, but I suppose the U.S. mainly, they were probably at their peak, their zenith, as it were, in about 1950 or so. Herbert W. Armstrong wrote about this in the United States and Britain in Prophecy, and he has a chapter in there, chapter 12, which talks about he looks at the U.S. and the U.K. at their height when they were the most powerful nation and then groups of nations on Earth. And then in the book, the time he was writing was about 1966 was when he had the last update. And obviously the U.S. had fallen somewhat. So we're updating that a little bit today, but we're going to take a look at the U.S. and some statistics related to the United States and the U.K. in 1950 and then see where we are today in 2017. It's pretty interesting to see not only the U.S. sliding down, but what nations have slid up to the top of the charts. It's an interesting look to compare those two times.
And it's probably not a coincidence that the number of people who have no religion is going up drastically while we see America and Britain's decline, their decline in terms of their resources. It's totally the opposite. In one way, we're becoming less moral, we don't believe in God as much as we used to, and at the same time, these blessings are disappearing.
Yeah, and that gets to the kind of the core of the issue here is, okay, well, no one's going to deny that the U.S. and the U.K. have been very blessed. Where does that come from? That's a good question. Mr. Armstrong writes here, in the United States and Britain in Prophecy, he says, few realize that every desired prized possession imposes with it the obligation of responsibility for its use. Does the 8-year-old boy who was given a shiny new bicycle by his parents feel a consciousness for the responsibility imposed on him? Unless the fact is impressed on him by his parents for the care of it and the carefulness with which he must ride it to avoid injuring himself or others, in most cases he won't think that way unless they tell him, be careful with this thing. You know, I've given you this really nice bike, take care of it. And so he's using that as an illustration here of the United States. He says, when God lavished on our people such wealth and power and economic possession as no peoples have ever before enjoyed, did we appreciate what we had or feel the sense of responsibility for its wise and proper use? So it's an interesting question. If you are a blessed people, if you have quite a bit, is there a responsibility for it? What do you do with it? And we hear politicians talk about that, that the U.S. has a moral responsibility to the world or to this group or to that group or to dreamers coming across the border. There's a lot of interpretation of that. But there is a truth to the fact that if you are given something, you are responsible to treat it correctly. And, you know, as we're going to see today in the U.K. and in the U.S., we've taken these things for granted.
Yeah, you can definitely see looking at this nation today in particular how our people just seem to think that we have earned these national blessings and therefore we can do with them as we please. We can basically eliminate our southern border like you alluded to there, because why not? It's totally our choice and our doing that we have these blessings in the first place. But if we were thinking about God giving us those blessings and thinking about how he would want us to use them, probably a lot of our national policies would be very different.
Yeah, it's really interesting, and it the question there, of course, is, well, where do these blessings come from? And I pulled up a couple of speeches from President Obama because they were the ones that I happened to find. You could go back and look at almost any president in modern times, and they do talk about, the U.S. being blessed, but very rarely do they mention God, other than at the end, the token, God bless America. And here's a couple of excerpts from some speeches President Obama gave in the last few years. This was the night of his first presidential election victory. He says, tonight we proved once more that the true strength of our nation comes not from our might of our arms or the scale of our wealth, but from the enduring power of our ideals, democracy, liberty, opportunity, and unyielding hope. I mean, it sounds good. But is that where our blessings came from? Because we had unyielding hope? I think there's hope in other nations. I think there's, as people would see it in other nations, they have good ideals. Is that where it comes from? He's saying it comes from us because we're good, but that's not what the Bible says.
Yeah, so those types of ideals would not stand up to scrutiny if we really tried to analyze how those things are actually causing our nation's greatness. We couldn't prove that in any way at all. And so there has to be something more to it than just our hope, than democracy, which is not even the form of government that God prefers. So clearly we're trying to look to ourselves and not to a higher power giving us those awesome blessings.
Yeah, I've often hoped things will work out. I don't know that ever caused them to.
It happens like, you know, 50-50. Like, what we hope for happens half the time. It's not necessarily of itself powerful enough to cause anything.
Right. A couple other quotes from him. President Obama, in his first inauguration speech, he said, "In reaffirming the greatness of our nation, we understand that greatness is never a given. It must be earned." The implication there being that we earned it somehow, like we did something great that gave us these blessings. You know, there's a lot of we, a lot of me, a lot of I in these speeches. And one last one here, he says, "For we know that our patchwork heritage is a strength, not a weakness. We are a nation of Christians and Muslims, Jews and Hindus, and non-believers." And That's interesting when you compare that to what Abraham Lincoln said in his proclamation of April 30th, 1863. He was calling for a day of fasting and prayer because of the Civil War. He said, "It is the duty of nations as well as of men to own their dependence upon the overruling power of God and to recognize the sublime truth announced in the Holy Scriptures and proven by all history that those nations only are blessed whose God is the Lord." That's what President Lincoln said. Now, fast forward all these years later, and we have a president saying, actually, our strength is because we have all kinds of different faiths and people that don't have a faith, and that's what makes us strong.
Oh, it's just such a contrast there of, and also, you know, you could always say that what President Obama said there sounds hopeful. It sounds like it's a uniting type of a message, but when you get down to practical terms, having all these different religions mixed into one place, it doesn't work anywhere. It never has in all of history. In fact, it only precipitates a national fall. If you can't even decide where your values are coming from, if there's no unity in what the values should be because we're all adhering to different religious books or no religious book at all, that's not a great foundation to sustain a nation. And also, Abraham Lincoln's said many times, we did nothing at all to attain these blessings, and President Obama said that we earned them somehow. United States and Britain in Prophecy, this book that we're talking about, shows very clearly that we didn't do anything to earn these blessings.
Yeah, I mean, President Lincoln knew that, and going on in this proclamation that he gave in 1863, you know, he said, "We have been the recipients of the choicest blessings of heaven. We have been preserved these many years in peace and prosperity. We have grown in numbers, wealth, and power as no other nation ever has grown. But we have forgotten God." Imagine a politician saying that today, right? You'd say, "What God? The multi-faith God? You know, these people don't believe in a God." And he continued, he said, "We have forgotten the gracious hand which preserved us in peace and multiplied and enriched and strengthened us. And we have vainly imagined in the deceitfulness of our hearts that these blessings were produced by some superior wisdom and virtue of our own." And that's the exact opposite, I think, as to some of those other quotes that President Obama made when he came into office. And you could pick other presidents, too. I'm not just trying to pick on him. That just happened to be what I found there. But, you know, President Obama talked about earning it and the greatness of our nations because of our liberty and opportunity and hope. And President Lincoln said, "We got it because God gave it to us, and we've forgotten him, and we need to repent." And because he said that and the nation responded, on some level anyway, and certainly his great leadership, the U.S. was saved. It could have been destroyed.
That's really true. It did come down to the nation turning to God in prayer. Who knows What would have been the outcome of the Civil War if we hadn't had a unifying leader like that who did understand that God was the cause of the nation's blessings, but at the same time, he was also allowing them to get into a civil war because they were turning from God. That's quite a deep understanding that Abraham Lincoln had, and that clearly we've lost that nationally today, because there has been a pretty big and clear and obvious movement for anyone to spot of pushing God out of every institution in society. Education, you can't talk about God being the creator. You have to go to evolution. I mean, pick an institution and you could very clearly spot that there's no place for God anymore, even though God is printed on our money, even though we say God bless America, that's even turning into a secular phrase now. There are so many areas just that prove God has no place in society, and when that's how we treat him, clearly those blessings are going to disappear pretty quickly.
Yeah, so we know, I mean, obviously everybody knows, like you said, that if you look at 1950 to today, there's been a decline in the, I would say, the at least people having some sort of a religion, or, you know, Christian, basically, religion in the U.S. And there still are some that hold to something, but in a lot of cases, people have gone away from that. And where are we as far as just economically and so forth from 1950 till now? It's interesting to look at, especially when you consider, as Abraham Lincoln said, nations that are blessed by God do well, and those that are not blessed, they don't do well. That's a fact of history and of the Bible. So we're going to take a look at some of the statistics now from 1950 and then look at where we are today, and you be the judge. Blessings? Not blessings. Which way does it go? The first one brought out here in this book, The United States and Britain Prophecy, is world petroleum output in 1950 was almost 3,800 million barrels. Of this total, the United States alone produced more than one half, nearly 52%. Together, the British Commonwealth and the United States produced 60% of the crude petroleum, not including our vast foreign investments. That was 1950. There's a lot of power in that. Today it is Russia, Saudi Arabia, top two, and then the United States.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, they're number one. Russia is, and then Saudi Arabia. We haven't fallen completely off the map, but a lot of these nations, Russia and China, are going to keep factoring in, where they are producing a lot more than what we are. And there's a lot of power in how much you can produce there. Literally power, of course, but also just economic power and strength. We used to be way at the top. Russia, Saudi Arabia have surpassed us today.
And certainly there could be detractors who say, well, yeah, but America's still doing pretty well, and maybe it's just a matter of those other nations rising and not so much America declining. At the same time, why would you ever want Russia and China superior to America? That's a hugely dangerous position to be in, and we know even prophetically that that's a huge problem for the entire world to try to deal with, nations like that rising. Whenever you have America as the dominant nation in the world is a safer place because America is not trying to impose tyranny on everyone else. Whenever you allow Gentile powers to take charge and to take over resources, and really to take over resources despite not having the abundance, the natural abundance that America has, you're really setting yourself up for disaster.
Here's another one from 1950. Britain and America mined 11 times as much coal as all other nations combined. So, of course, coal's been a big topic here in the U.S. According to 2009, the total coal production, China was putting out 3,050 metric tons. The U.S. was second at 973 metric tons. So they were way, way outproducing us. So here you got China jumping to the top of the list. You see Russia and China's names popping up quite often when you look at these. And so you can see as we go through here, the U.S. used to be on top by a lot, and now we're dropping further and further down the list as you see mainly Russia and China rise to the top of a lot of these production categories.
And there's a different mindset there because China and Russia, they clearly have a lot more urgency. China, partly because its population is just enormous and it dwarfs pretty much every population of every other nation. But at the same time, a big reason is that China and Russia just want to rule the world. And to have those types of resources powering their superpower, that's exactly what they need. It's what they want. They have global ambitions, which America doesn't seem to have. I mean, we've even gone so far as to give up a lot of vital sea lanes like the Panama Canal and Gibraltar, and that's brought out in this book too. if we had any idea that other nations would use those to try to destroy us, we would never be giving those things up. We would never let other nations overtake us on these different lists.
Yeah, it's amazing when you just look at all the different things that have happened here in the last, you know, 60 some plus years. It's interesting too, because you do have to get a little bit of a historical perspective to know where you are today. Otherwise, you know, you get kind of lost in the moment and things seem like, well, they're going on as normal. But when you look at this slide and you think, okay, well, where would we be in another 10 years or so on or so forth? So it is interesting. In 1950 as well, together with the British Commonwealth and America, they produced 3/4 of the world's steel, the United States alone producing almost 60% of it. And now where we are in 2015, the latest statistics, Australia is number one with that. They have a lot of precious metals, followed by Brazil, then China, then India, then Russia, and then the United States. We've slid way, way down that, and the UK is not even in the list. So some of these we are down into the, you know, bottom part of the top five, or some cases we're not even in the top five. So it's amazing how things have changed like that. And when you look at Australia, obviously an ally of the U.S. there, but China's got quite a hold on what's going on in Australia as well.
Yeah, and China has a hold on us as well, because they own so much of our debt, and we would have to pay them back. If we ever wanted to get assertive toward them, we'd probably have to pay back our debts first. We can't really say much to China right now because of the situation that we've put ourselves in. And how can we be the greatest producer of wealth in the world when we have debt like that? It's just crippling. It's not too hard to see why maybe we would be falling down a lot of these lists. You know, Britain, for example, can't even really afford their navy because of their welfare state. And we're putting all of our money toward these programs that are not essential and they're not important. And they're destroying the work ethic of the people to even want to produce things like that.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, there's President Trump obviously can look at these statistics like anybody can and did when he went through when he was campaigning for president. You know, the U.S. is slipping. People do know that. Manufacturing's leaving. Things are leaving. There, you have towns in the what they used to call the Rust Belt there that are, you know, pretty much a shell of themselves because the manufacturing's dried up. So people understand that. They know it's changing, and they might kind of blame it on, say, a changing, you know, economy or something like that. But other nations aren't slowing down. They're speeding up in their production of things. And so, you know, some of the thought out there is, well, we need to look out for number one. We need to look out for the U.S., and we don't want to work with these other nations. But, I mean, we're not producing like we used to. How well could we take care of ourselves if other nations said, we won't trade with you? Probably not as well as we might think.
Yeah, there's just a huge amount of naivety in this country because we've been so prosperous for so long, and we haven't ever had to go through a war on our own soil except for if it was amongst ourselves, basically. Obviously, as soon as Britain left, then we were doing pretty well, outside of a couple of minor skirmishes, but we've been pretty much a world away from every other threat to our power. An entire ocean divides us from those other nations on either side. And so we just think that we're safe. And yet a lot of nations do not see it that way. They can't wait for America to fall. You see it on these lists of the different resources. You see it by the fact that we don't have those sea gates anymore. You see it by these alliances that are building and forming now that do not really want to see America succeed. They're building to try to counteract America. And then, of course, again, we have that debt. We have that debt that really makes it hard for us to be an authoritative voice anymore when China could say, well, you need to pay up first before you tell us anything.
We are in a bad spot in a lot of those situations. In 1950, the British Commonwealth produced 2/3 of the world's gold, about 266 million pounds worth. That was in 1950. While the United States had 3 times as much gold reserve as the total for the rest of the world. Today, the number one producer of gold is China, followed by Australia. And I don't know how many of those mines China owns, too. So that the top two spots might be China, followed by Russia. And then down there, number four is the United States. So that we have been surpassed there. It's interesting when you look at who's holding the most gold. This is kind of an interesting list because I don't know. People will put out statistics, but there's some debate as to how realistic it is. Gold holdings. According to the list, the U.S. still has the most gold. Germany's number two, by the way. But as I even point out here in this write-up, President Trump made headlines recently claiming we do not have the gold. They say, but as far as this report says, we think we still do. So they're giving reports as to what they think we have, but it's interesting. I don't know. Who knows? Has anybody been down there counting it lately? You know, there's some in Colorado and Fort Knox and other places, but there is a question as to how much gold we're actually holding.
I would tend to believe the president on that because there have been a couple of instances where I think it was even Germany that said, well, why don't you just show us the gold that you were going to give us in this deal, and we said, oh well, we can't let you see any of it. And so it's almost like we're trying to hide the fact that maybe it's not there. It's really what it seems like. It gets suspicious after a while. If you have it, why not let there be any proof that you have it instead of people calling us on our bluff?
Yeah, so it's very interesting. One last one here, just statistically looking at the difference between 1950 US UK and today. The United States alone once produced 73% of the automobiles in the world. Today, we're not. China is making the most, and it's by a long amount. The U.S. does factor in at number two. However, that's not personal cars. It's because of making fleet vehicles. As far as personal cars go, Germany surpasses the U.S. as well. So, I mean, if you were an investor, if you were a high roller, as it were, a global investor, and you just looked at these trends, where would you put your money? Probably Russia and China, Germany, right? Maybe EU. I don't know that you'd put it in the U.S. At least not like you used to. And if you just looked at it monetarily and you took God out of the equation, or talking about blessings, and you just said, well, who's on the rise? Who's on the fall here? Well, Russia's on the rise. China's on the rise. EU and Germany also, depending on how they're kind of lumped together. And the United States is on a big slide, and the U.K. fell off the map.
Yeah, they're completely irrelevant now, it would seem, in terms of global power. They have to have an alliance to be able to make an impact anywhere at this point. And America doesn't seem to realize that it's heading the exact same way. I mean, a lot of the prophecies don't even include America at the end of it, because they've already wiped themselves out and then been wiped out by a foreign power. So that just shows you, well, clearly America had to do a lot of it to itself, because for a long time this nation was invincible.
It's a really fascinating read if you haven't looked at it, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. It's worth checking out. A last quote here from Mr. Armstrong, who wrote the book. It says, and because Abraham Lincoln saw a nation who had forgotten God back in the time of the Civil War, a nation drunk with a success not due to its own efforts, a nation taking all the credit and glory to itself, this great president called upon the nation for a day of fasting and prayer to confess this national sin before God. It would never happen today, I don't think. He continues, the fate of the nation hung in the balance when he issued that proclamation, but God heard and answered that great national prayer offensive, and the nation was then preserved, and we're still here today by a threat. He says, but today the threat of our fate is 1,000 times more seriously hanging in the balance, and today we do not have a president or a prime minister with the vision, understanding, and courage to bring our nations to their knees. And we're told, right, that the strength of our nation is that we have all different beliefs and some don't believe in anything. Well, that's not what Abraham Lincoln said. And so do you think we'll have a Lincoln rise today that will help the nation get on its knees, as it says? I don't think anyone believes that would happen.
No, not at all, especially because a lot of our leaders have quoted scriptures that, you know, they might have some hope to them, but they're leaving out the context, which says there is a lot that we have to do to be able to sustain the blessings that we have. It takes obedience to God. They don't really talk about that part. They don't talk about turning from sins. Sometimes scriptures are even deliberately misquoted. And right. So whenever you have that, I think there's an element of fear there among leaders. Even if they do believe in God, they don't want to be criticized for saying, look, we have some parts of our country that are immoral that need to change. They might not even personally believe it. Maybe they think that the law is done away themselves and they don't really care what takes place morally in this country.
It's a really interesting book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. Really important one, too. Check it out. It's at thetrumpet.com. It's free. And we're just looking at some of the statistics there out of the one of the chapters today. 1950, the U.S. at its zenith. You can think of black and white TV and baseball games and the nuclear family and all of those things. And that's not the U.S. we live in today or the U.K. Just even looking at some of those statistics, we are on the slide. And it seems like it's accelerating the more time goes on. And, you know, like President Lincoln pointed out, too, we needed to get back to God to save our nation. And then Mr. Armstrong wrote about how it's a more serious crisis today. We do have civil wars brewing in this country, but then you also have Russia over there. You have China. You have Germany in the Middle East. Lots of other powers, too, all looking at the United States.
And a lot of them have nuclear weapons that are far more powerful than they were back in 1950. So in every single way, America seems to be declining while these other nations are rising, and they have a lot greater threats that they can pose to us.
Make sure you get the United States and Britain Prophecy. Check it out at thetrumpet.com. That's all the time we have for this edition of Trumpet Radio Live. Thanks for being with us today. For myself, Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon, have a great rest of your day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.